Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the professionals when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, to incompetence, incapacity. And we have now been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions of our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals. Paid professionals like bankers and professionals like financial affairs advisors and doctors to manage and treat our health problems and lawyers to direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, our rights, our liberties, and our duties. And if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free general law CD package? Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. Just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967 to order your free general law CD package. If you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about professionals. Professionals, the people who have letters after their names. The people, according to the dictionary, who profess knowledge in art, sport, or occupation. They profess that they have knowledge in some specialized area, whether that's art, sport, or occupation. A profession, from Bouvier's Law Dictionary, is a mystery. Mystery. If you're entering a religious order, that's a mystery. If you're entering the legal profession, that's a mystery. And of course, the professions are a mystery because we don't know anything about them, and that's why they're mysterious. I mean, if we knew and understood law, banking, the professions of theology, or law, we wouldn't need the professionals, would we? So it's a secret, it's a fraternity, it's an order of which these adepts belong and we are excluded. It goes further than that. I mentioned to you last time that all of the professions are criminal enterprises. All of them. Now, there's a couple of exceptions to that. I guess I shouldn't say all of them. An engineer isn't a criminal profession, but we have turned engineering into a criminal profession because all of these people are licensed. Licensed. And nearly everybody carries a license in his pocket for something. You have a business license to operate your business and an automobile, an operator's license to operate your truck or your automobile, and you've got a professional license, you know, to operate your profession. And so we have these licenses, but what is a license and what's the definition of a license? So you go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary and a license is permission to do something. It's a license to do something. And the thing that you are doing is illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. Now think about that. You got a license to commit something that's illegal, to do something that's illegal, which is a crime. It's a violation of the law. That's why you have to have a doctor's license or a medical certificate, because you're going to kill people from time to time, and there's a law that says you shall do no murder. And so the state comes along and licenses the doctor, and as long as he stays within the prescribed regimen, the protocols of his profession, he can kill people without being punished. Isn't that just special? And doctors, through what we call iatrogenic disease, kill 130,000 people a year. By their own admission, they kill 130,000. The actual number is somewhere around two or three times that, but then, you know, I can't come in here and say, well, we know that a quarter of a million or a half a million people a year are being killed by iatrogenic disease, because that's speculation. But it's not speculation when the medical profession themselves admit to 130,000. That's pretty authentic. And that's why they have to be licensed. Lawyers have to be licensed, because what they're practicing violates the law of God. It's a criminal activity. And the criminal activity is prohibited in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, where it says, "You shall not add to this law, nor shall you take away from it." Lawyers don't practice the law of God. They've got their own law, their own legal system, and they're in league with the politicians. And the politicians have one goal, and that's to alter, reform, amend, or to abolish the law of God. That's what they're in power to do. That's what their job description entails. So when we take a look at the professions, we have occupations, professions, and quasi-professions. So professions are businesses like, but not limited to, law, lawyers, theology, priests, preachers, and prophets, medicine, such as medical doctors, dentistry, oncology, proctology, business, you can be in business management or a corporate officer. There's archaeology, paleontology, geology. There's economists and mathematicians and astronomers. You could be a professor, a teacher, or an instructor. A physicist, they come in various varieties like laser physicists and nuclear physicists. And I guess there's just ordinary physicists, chemists. And then there's druggists, and then drug dealers, and drug users, and then witchcraft. And that comes under the heading of druggist. And biology, you could be an ichthyologist, or a zoologist, or a fish, or a bugologist of some type. You know, there's all kinds of studies of various life forms. And then we have quasi-occupations, or quasi-professions, I should say, rather than occupations, but quasi-professions. And those are people like policemen. While they may not have a degree from a college or university, a policeman is kind of a quasi-profession. Fireman. You might be a professional golfer, you know, or a football player, or a baseball player. A Tiger Woods, for instance, or a Joe Namath, or a Mickey Mantle. Computer programmers don't necessarily have to have a degree from college, but they're looked upon as being kind of quasi-professionals. And, of course, a professional like Tiger Woods, I don't know if he's ever spent a day in college, or Joe Namath. I saw a piece on Joe Namath the other day, 63 years old, and he's going back to college at the University of Alabama to get his degree that he never got. Not that I think he probably needs a degree, but then I guess he wants to get one. And then you could be a banker. You don't have to have a degree from college per se to be a banker. You could be working as a teller or a loan officer. You could be a professional soldier. A lot of people do that, and they don't have degrees from college. An airline pilot, flight attendants, they're kind of quasi-professionals. Engineers, designers, and builders. And you might be a politician. Politicians typically do go to college in one form or another. They get some kind of a degree, but they don't necessarily have to. And then we have the professional politician, people who make a career out of politics and spend all of their lives or much of it in Congress or the state legislatures. Then there are actors, entertainers, daredevils, and showmen. These people are typically professionals. Rodeo riders are professionals. Writers are professionals. Meteorologists, you know, the people that give you the weatherman on the 6 o'clock news, you know, they try to practice prophecy. They want to prophesy the future, meteorologists. And then we have secretaries and fishermen. And these people have professions, you know, like a guy that owns a fishing boat and goes out and catches salmon. Or you got a secretary who's working in a business or in a, you know, like the judge. I'm thinking of a secretary as maybe the judge's law clerk or something like that. These are what we call the quasi-professions. You know, then we have the lowest lowlifes. That's those of us that have blue collars and we just go out and go to work. You know, we're people like plumbers and farmers. A farmer, you know, you might be a milker, a picker, a pruner, a rancher. Carpenters, you might be an apprentice, a journeyman, or a master carpenter. Truck drivers, cab drivers, chauffeurs, electricians, laborers, salesmen, butchers, bakers, glazers, mechanics, janitors, cooks, waiters, bottle washers, dishwashers, window washers. You know, these are the people who typically don't have degrees in college, and we're not looked upon as being very professional, although I always thought of myself, you know, as a contractor, as being, you know, kind of a guy that's needed in the society. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is I've just got to read to you a paragraph from the International Forecaster here as it deals with the housing boom, and I've been kind of taking to task these professionals here. I mentioned some of the baser aspects of this thing of the professionals. I mean, these are the people we all were taught to look up to. These are the people we're all taught to follow. You know, honor the judge. He's a legal professional. And don't ever do anything unless you go to your attorney and get his approval. And I told you about my grandmother. You know, her doctor ordered her. I mean, she came home one time and announced to everybody that she was under doctor's orders. I mean, it almost sounded like, you know, a soldier comes in and says, "Oh my God, I just got my orders and I'm shipping out to England or someplace," you know. There are places, you know, in life where you do get ordered around, but it was kind of a surprise to me that doctors were ordering their patients around, but that's what my grandmother said. Well, Bob Chapman is writing concerning the housing bubble. And here's what he has to say. He said, who is to blame for this housing bubble problem? The Federal Reserve, by way of the lowest interest rate since the 1930s, and endless money and credit and no control over loan qualifications. The banks, the savings and loan associations, and other lenders such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that threw lending caution to the winds and gave mortgages to anyone who could make his mark on a contract and lie about his income. Then, in a class all by themselves, are the real estate agents. They created a financial death trap for one-third of all borrowers. And over the next 18 months, more than $2 trillion of these loans will be repriced, and new monthly payments will be 25 to 100% higher. And most people will not be able to afford these higher payments, and they will be forced into another exotic loan or go into default. And if you do not have equity or cash to the equity, you cannot refinance. And many will just walk away, and that triggers debt relief. When a home is sold for less than it is owed, it creates what is known as a phantom income that the borrower must pay income taxes on. And that will create many bankruptcies. And we can thank the Federal Reserve, the banks, and the other lenders for this predicament. And if you don't think this is serious, then look at these numbers. 32% of new mortgages and new equity loans in 2005 were interest only. 43% of buyers put no money down. 15% of buyers owe at least 10% more than their homes are worth. 10% of all mortgage holders have no equity, and that's growing by leaps and bounds. And if we were to include 2006, 2007, and 2008, then more than $2.7 trillion of mortgages will have to adjust to higher rates over the next 2 to 3 years. Now think about that for a minute. Who caused that? Who caused this debt bubble? Would we say that the secretaries and waitresses, the truck drivers, the plumbers, carpenters, and electricians are the root cause of this housing bubble? I don't think so. Now, this fella that is writing this newsletter here, Bob Chapman is probably a college graduate. In fact, I think he mentioned that he was years ago. You know, he's probably in his 70s now, but he had gone to college. And I'm not down on somebody that went to college and got a degree and tried to learn something and got smart. Here's what my bitch in life is. It is that we've been taught and trained to follow these trained professionals as if they're gods, and that if we don't follow them, something terrible is going to happen to us. And that if we don't give them their due, and if we don't hire them and follow after them, something bad, wicked, terrible, awful, or evil is going to happen to us. And I think that's just plain poppycock. In fact, it appears to me that the problems that we see around the world are caused by these paid professionals. Now let's think about this housing bubble for a second here. Who is it that encouraged us to go out and make these adjustable rate mortgages? Wasn't it the real estate brokers and the bankers and the lenders? And aren't these the trained paid professionals, the economists, and all of these smart people that work in the banks and the savings and loans that work out all these numbers and these interest rates and et cetera? Aren't these the people that we were taught to train and follow and taught that these guys know all the answers? And now we find that the whole economy, hanging by a thread and dependent upon this housing bubble that's been created over the last 6 or 8 years, created in part by politicians and bankers and savings and loans and the Federal Reserve and a whole host and plethora of people are involved in this, but it's the professions. And notice this little phantom income tax down here. Listen to this again. Many will just walk away from your house. Now, you've got a house, and you can't make the payments on it. You paid $250,000 for it, and it goes down to $125,000 in value. Do the payments go down by 50% when the value of the house goes down by 50%? Oh, no, no. Your $250,000 house that you're paying $2,000 a month for continues on, and you keep making the $2,000 a month payments, even if you're unemployed, even if the value of the house is cut in half. They continue on, and maybe it's an adjustable rate mortgage, and as the interest rates go up, the price of the mortgage goes up from $2,000 to $22,000, $24,000, $26,000, $28,000, maybe $3,000 a month. Now you're paying $3,000 a month and you're unemployed, and your house is worth $125,000. Who thought that up? Who came to the conclusion that adjustable rate mortgages were good for people? Wasn't that some kid that came out of college, got a degree after his name, called himself an MBA, called himself a banker, a real estate broker, or somebody? And when you came in and said, gee, I'd like to buy a house, he says, boy, have I got a deal for you. Let me recommend this. And then, listen, if you don't have enough money to qualify, listen, we've got adjustable rate mortgages over here, and we charge interest and usury. Now, I mentioned to you last time that there's only two ways for us to learn. We can learn the scientific method by experimentation, or we can learn by revelation. Now, of course, we Americans, we threw out revelation along with the Ten Commandments and God, and we're not going to listen to any poppycock that comes from the Bible that might say to us, don't go surety for anybody, and don't pay interest or usury. That's against the law. But we wouldn't listen to that, but we would listen to a paid professional who came out of Harvard or Yale or some school or some institution of higher learning who's got a degree after his name and says, hey, we've got a very innovative finance or refinance package here. It's called an adjustable rate mortgage. Oh, those are the guys that we really want to listen to. And when the value of your house goes down from $250,000 to $125,000, and the interest rates go up, and your payments go from $2,000 to $3,000 a month, and you lose your job, or for some other reason you can't make these payments, and you file for bankruptcy, or you walk away from this package, you know, they write that off, and they say, well, let's see, now you owed $250,000, and you walked away from that, and then that debt was written off, and therefore you have a $250,000 income. Therefore, you have to pay income tax on that $250,000 that was written off in bankruptcy. My God, who thought of that? Who thought that up? Who wrote that into the law? What kind of a perverse, wicked, evil mind could dream up such a preposterous outcome? Well, if you said, well, it was a professional, it was a lawyer, somebody that went to law school, somebody who's real smart, you got that right. Yeah, you got that right. Those lawyers aren't dumb people. They're very, very intelligent. And we send them to these colleges and universities where we have thrown God and revelation out, and we have accepted this concept of the scientific principle. We are going to experiment. We're going to find out for ourselves. We think God is a liar, and we can't trust Him, so we're going to experiment and test it for ourselves. And then the college professors have instilled that into their students. Their students now become amoral. If they're not just plain immoral, they're at least amoral. They're certainly not moral. Morality, remember, comes from the law of God and the Ten Commandments. So something that's amoral will just be neutral, and then it's immoral. It's actually a violation of the Scripture, or some scriptural principle, or some principle of law. Let me ask you this. Where were the preachers when all of these adjustable rate mortgages and all this interest and usury was going on? Where were they? Were they in a vacuum someplace and they didn't know anything about this? Did they ever get up in the pulpit on Sunday and say, listen, boys and girls, did you know that God, in the Bible, by revelation, has said that interest and usury is bad for you and that it is against the law? And that you ought not to do that? Any preachers anywhere? Did you ever hear a story from any preacher, any priest, any prophet, any minister who told you, don't do that? I haven't heard of any. So the preachers are complicit with the real estate brokers and the bankers and the lawyers in a ripoff of gigantic proportions, which is going to harm everybody who got involved in this adjustable rate mortgage scam, or the interest and usury scam, or the housing bubble scam, or the paper money scam, or the credit card scam, or the Securities and Exchange Commission scam, or the stock and bond scam. All of it. Unjust weights and balances. A violation of the commandment that says, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. I didn't hear anybody coming around here saying, hey, wait a minute, this is against the law and this is bad. Now, once in a while, you'll see a newsletter like Bob Chapman and the International Forecaster, who I guess, by the way, I guess I should give you his name and number. After all, if I'm going to cite from his paper, I need to give credit where credit's due. And Chapman's the one that funked it up and wrote the story. I'm just a reporter. I'm just reporting to you. This is where you're at. And we followed after these paid professionals. And now look at where we're at. Bob Chapman, by the way, puts out the International Forecaster. The International Forecaster comes out twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturday. And it's about 20 pages each time. This is 19 pages, and this is the Saturday edition, Saturday, November the 18th, 2006. The International Forecaster for November 2006, Volume 2, Number 11-2, Post Office Box 510518, Punta Gorda, Florida, and the zip code 33951-0518. Now, I know that was a little fast, so why don't you take this down? It's $130 a year. I recommend Bob Chapman very highly. And he's a reporter, and he gives you the straight skinny. And I don't want you to sit there and say, well, gee, old Gordon's down on people that don't have, or the people that do have degrees, or that have been to college. No, not at all. Listen, I'm an old-timey employer, and I have employed hundreds of people over the years, and many of those people had degrees from college, and many of them were very, very astute, very knowledgeable people, good, hard-working Americans. I'm not opposed to people going to college, but I want to tell you that all these professions over here now are criminal activities, and you ought to think about whether or not you want to participate in these kind of criminal activities. There's no such thing as a crime without a penalty. No such thing. Crime does not occur in a vacuum. It doesn't occur without a penalty. And Bob Chapman is a great expositor of of social commentary. It's an international financial, economic, political, and paper on social commentary, published and edited by Robert Chapman. The email address, email, internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. And you can go to their webpage. It's www.theinternationalforecaster.com. It's easy enough. It's all one word. It's a long one. It is www.theinternationalforecaster.com. I think you'll be glad you did. If you get a copy or two, just tell them to send you a copy. What I do here at the school, I save these copies from as I come in, and then I pass them out to my students, and I say, listen, look at this. What do you think of this guy? Now, I mentioned to you the other day that Jesus of Nazareth didn't have any good word for preachers, lawyers, or bankers. Preachers, lawyers, and bankers. Didn't have a good word. And I asked you, I said, now, if you know of any good words in the Bible anywhere for preachers, lawyers, or bankers, let me know, would you? And I'll give them credit where credit's due. Now, yesterday I think I told you about preachers. That's in Luke 11, 37 through 54, and in Matthew 7, verses 21 through 23. I was talking to a guy on the phone last night from Canada, and he said, you forgot this one. Jesus also made the observation that prostitutes would enter into the kingdom of heaven before those preachers. Sinners and prostitutes will enter into the kingdom of heaven before the preachers. I'd forgotten that one. I should have written that one down. Now, flipping over here to Luke chapter 11 again, I wanted to give you a little exposition here concerning the lawyers. Lawyers are very, very prominent people in our society. We here in America don't believe we can live without lawyers. We have more lawyers in this country than any place else in the world. In fact, if I remember right, we have more lawyers in the United States than all the rest of the world combined. I saw something like that, or maybe all of Europe combined, or all of South America combined, but we've got a lot of lawyers. I mean, there's a bunch of them. There's more than a million lawyers in the United States of America today. A million of those parasites running around. Well, here's what Jesus had to say about lawyers. He said, then answered one of the lawyers and said unto him, Master, thus saying, thou reproachest us also. I mean, he's at the same dinner meeting, and after he had just eaten chewed the preachers out, this lawyer looks up at him and he says, hey, are you going to chew us out too? And here's what Jesus said. He said, woe unto you also, you lawyers, because you laid men with burdens grievous to be borne, and you yourselves touch not the burdens with one of your fingers. Woe unto you, lawyers, for you build the sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. Truly you bear witness that you allow the deeds of your fathers, for they indeed killed them, and you built their sepulchres. Therefore also said the wisdom of God, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they shall slay, and some of them they shall persecute. That the blood of all the prophets which was shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. From the blood of Abel to the blood of Zacharias, which perished between the altar and the temple, truly I say unto you, it shall be required of this generation. Woe unto you, lawyers, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You entered not in yourselves, and them that were entering in you hindered. And as he said these things unto them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to urge him vehemently, and to provoke him to speak of many things, laying wait for him, and seeking to catch something out of his mouth, that they might accuse him. Now that's what he had to say about the lawyers. He called them murderers. He called them killers. And then they build the sepulchers. They build the tombs and the monuments for their victims. It's always been curious to me that Andrew Jackson, the president who vetoed the United States National Bank, who had nothing but scathing contempt and scorn for bankers and paper money, is prominently featured on the portrait of the $20 bill. Now, what perverse, screwy mind would have put Andrew Jackson's portrait on a piece of worthless paper that Jackson condemned with every breath that came out of his mouth? And that prophecy that you just saw right there, these are the killers, the murderers, the lawyers. And he called them that. Did you catch the words? He said, "Truly you bear witness that you allowed the deeds of your fathers, and they, your fathers, indeed killed them," that is the prophets, "and then build their sepulchers." They build the monuments on their victims. Now take a look at this war over here in Iraq. The people who have instigated that war, for the most part, are lawyers. Nearly all of your legislators that are sitting in the halls of Congress come out of our law schools, boys and girls. And some of them are super lawyers. Nearly all of them are Masons. Nearly all of them come out of the law schools, and nearly all of them are just as perverse as is being described here in Luke 11. Verses 45 through 57. I just thought I'd share that with you. That's what Jesus thought of lawyers and preachers. And he also didn't have any good words about money changers either. And over in Matthew chapter 21, verse 12, he threw them out of the temple. They were over there doing business, of course, in the temple. And he said, "You're making my father's house a den of thieves." He called the money changers a den of thieves. And the scripture prohibits usury. In fact, usury is the only theft crime punishable by death. And you'll see that in Ezekiel chapter 18. Ordinarily, theft crimes are not punishable by death. But that one is. And who is it that is the prime mover and shaker of usury and interest? It's the bankers. And where did they get the power? From the politicians. And these bankers and politicians, almost to a man, almost without exception, are the professionals who go to college, get their degrees in their various fields, such as law, and then teach us that we ought to follow these people into this kind of filth and perversion. Listen to this in Matthew chapter 21, verse 12. Jesus went into the temple of God, and he cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. And he said to them, "It's written, 'My house shall be called the house of prayer,' but you've made it a den of thieves." He called the bankers a den of thieves. And the blind and the lame came to him in the temple and healed them. And when the chief priests and the scribes saw the wonderful things that he did, and the children crying in the temple and saying, "Hosanna to the Son of David," they were sore displeased. Sore displeased. In our churches today, the lawyers and the bankers sit in the chief seats, and praised by the preachers who go to the bankers to borrow money, and then get us to sign on the dotted line to pay the usury to the bankers for the temples of filth and perversion that we call churches today, in violation of the law of God, and then we call that righteous. Well, the God of Moses doesn't call that righteous, children. Hey, listen, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed to the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I might mention, too, while we're talking about professions, that he didn't have much good to say about doctors, either. In Exodus 15, verse 26, God himself said that he was our healer. Of course, now when we go to our medical professionals, they say, oh, no, that's not true. God is not your healer. I'm Marcus Welby, M.D., and I'm your healer, and I do that at Mercy Medical Center by using drugs and potions, also known as witchcraft. But here in 15, verse 26, he says, if you will diligently hearken to the voice of the Eternal your God, and if you do that which is right in his sight, and if you will give ear to his commandments and keep all of his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon you which I have brought upon the Egyptians, because I am the Eternal that healeth you. So, number one, this God, whoever he is. I mean, we got Allah and Buddha and Jesus and Yahweh and 15 other gods over here like Jupiter, you know, and so on. Now, whichever God that you're thinking about over here, I wanted to suggest to you that maybe this is a different guy that maybe you hadn't heard of before. That's a pretty wild statement there. He says, I'm the God that healeth you. Now, according to the scientific method, that's not true at all. Now, this is a revelation. You wouldn't know who your healer was if, in fact, it is this God unless he came to you and told you that. Furthermore, did you notice he said, if you obey all of my commandments and my statutes, I will lay none of these diseases upon you that I laid upon the Egyptians. So if you want to know where disease comes from, it comes from the creator of the universe. It is a punishment for the violation of those commandments and statutes. I said to you on day one when we opened this series of programs, I said, I know where disease comes from and I know what causes it. Now, the doctor over here, when you go to him and you say, well, do you know what causes cancer? He says, I don't know. When you go to the God of Abraham, he says, well, let me tell you who causes disease. It's me. And I'm the one that lays it upon you. I laid it upon the Egyptians. And if you practice my laws, I won't lay it upon you. Now, what isn't said is probably more eloquent than what is said, because the opposite to that is, and if you will not obey me and keep my commandments and my statutes, I will lay these diseases upon you that I laid upon the Egyptians. So if you want to know why it is that you've got cancer, rheumatism, or arthritis, heart disease, or something else, it's because that disease has been laid upon you by the creator of the universe, live and direct, because you wouldn't practice this law. Now, I didn't come here to preach a sermon and tell you you need to shape up or ship out or you need to do something different. I'm a reporter. I just came to deliver you the information. I gave you the information and I gave you the source. I didn't write that. Hell, I wasn't that smart. He had another statement that I thought was pretty keen in Matthew 15, verses 29 through 31. So we whip over here to Matthew 15. Talking about this thing of healing again. Doctors, you know. It's in Matthew 15, verse... excuse me. I'm getting ahead of myself. Matthew 15, verse 29. 15:29. He said, and Jesus departed from thence, and he came nigh into the Sea of Galilee, and he went up into a mountain, and he sat there. And great multitudes came to him, having with them those that were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, and many others. and cast them down at Jesus' feet, and he healed them. Insomuch that the multitude wondered when they saw the dumb to speak, the maimed to behold, and the lame to walk, and the blind to see, and they glorified the God of Israel. So in the New Testament, we have a confirmation of the statement that is made in Exodus 15, verse 26. And by the way, you can be healed today in the year 2006, but it ain't coming from the medical profession and scientific experimentation. We get a nice lady over here across the road from us, and she got cancer. And my wife has had cancer. She's been plagued for the last 28 years. And, you know, the Apostle Paul was hard-pressed to see very well. He was probably all right until he was struck blind by God and then healed. But he always had a problem with his eyes for the rest of his life. He paid a penalty for the rest of his life for the persecution that he inflicted upon the early New Testament believers. David, one time, he had a little bit of a bad habit there. He went out, he liked ladies, he liked the women, and he saw this neat woman over, her name was Bathsheba, and so he killed her husband, and then took her as his wife. And so one day, Nathan the prophet came over, and he talked to him about it. And he told David this little story. He said, there was a guy, he had 6,000 sheep over here, thousands of sheep, and he was a greedy sucker, and there was a man over here had one ewe, one prize ewe. I mean, it was probably the best sheep in the kingdom. And this guy with the 6,000 sheep went over and killed this man, stole his prize ewe. David said, well, who is this guy? Bring him before me, and I'll slay him. And Nathan said, it's you. You. You're the one that did that. So David, he recognized that he'd broken the law, and that he was guilty as he could be, and so he repented, and Psalm 51 describes his repentance. And he took full responsibility for his actions, and he said, hey God, tell you what I'd like you to do. You go ahead and lay upon me whatever punishment that you think is just in this case. I'm guilty. I did it. And if you're going to take the kingdom away from me, do it. If you're going to kill me, go ahead and do it. But I need to get square with you again, so I'm going to submit to you, and I'll take whatever punishment you give me. Well, he didn't kill him, and he didn't take his kingdom away. But he said, every night when you go to bed, you will not know if you're going to wake up in the morning for the rest of your life. And he said, there will always be trouble in your kingdom, and there will always be somebody who is trying to take your crown away from you. And in the end, David's own boy Absalom tried to overthrow David and take the kingdom. To the day he died, that was his punishment. He never got away with killing Uriah and stealing that man's wife. He didn't get away with that. He didn't pay for it with his life. He didn't lose the kingdom like Saul did. But he didn't get away with it either. That's why I keep telling you, you know, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. I pay penalties, my wife pays penalties, and you pay penalties. Now, the reason I bring that up is because the better you practice the law, the fewer penalties you have to pay. And this housing bubble, the national economy, the war in Iraq, the president that you have ruling over you, these are all curses that have come upon us because we wanted to follow the paid professionals. We wanted to practice the scientific method. And we rejected revelation. Absolutely rejected revelation. Now there's one more thing I think I ought to share with you, and that is that God is not opposed to wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Listen to this over here in Proverbs chapter 1. He says, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction and to perceive the words of understanding. So write that down, understanding. Do you want to perceive the words of understanding? Do the bankers understand the outcome of adjustable rate mortgages? Have they got a concept as to what the ultimate outcome of a fiat monetary system and what it's going to do to the average Joe six-pack, the waitresses and the plumbers and the truck drivers and all of us guys down here at the bottom of the barrel? because those of us down here at the bottom of the barrel are the ones that are going to take the brunt of the punishment or the final conclusion to this. We're the ones who are going to be unemployed, losing our homes, and to go hungry. It always falls on the poorest people in the society, not the rich guys. Not the guys that are up there in the Senate and House of Representatives. Those guys aren't going to be missing any meals. Their houses aren't going to be foreclosed on. They're not going to miss their retirement checks. But what about you, United Airlines pilots and you flight attendants? What about the rest of us out here? So when we're talking about understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. To give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb, and the interpretation of the proverb, the words of the wise, and their dark sayings. So here comes wisdom. Understanding and wisdom, coupled with knowledge. Now, God has a lot to say about wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. In verse 7, he says, "The fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." So here's a little instruction. Well, let's go to our medical doctors over here again, and let's go back and take a look at cancer. They've been promising us a cure to cancer. There's hardly a night goes by on the 6 o'clock news that there isn't a news article on some aspect of cancer research, with the promise that this new discovery is going to bring us a step closer to the cure for cancer. I'm an old man. Hell, I'm going to die before there's any cure to cancer, and I've been waiting for a cure to cancer all of my life, and you're going to be waiting for a cure to cancer all of your life. But let's take a look at the history of it. 1900, your chances of getting cancer were 1 in 33. Today, your chances of getting cancer are 1 out of 2. If there's two of us in the room, one of us is going to get cancer in our lifetime. And this has all occurred at the very same time that we rejected God in Revelation and adopted the scientific method and research. They keep promising. And as I've reported a number of times, there are 9 cures to cancer. 9. You can count them. I did a series of programs here not too long ago. ESSIAC was one of them. That was one of the books that I cited some real neat citations from. And by the way, ESSIAC is a criminal activity. You can't buy that stuff, and you can't have it here in the United States. Just thought I'd share that with you. The active ingredient in the original formula is called bloodroot, and you can't have that. It's banned, just like marijuana. Now, for some reason, our God thought that we could handle everything that's colored green. In Genesis 1, verses 28 and 29, he says, "I'm going to give you every green herb. They're all for meat for you. They're all herbs." Some of them we eat like broccoli, and some of them we take in very small quantities like bloodroot. Our government has come along, you know, with all the paid professionals. That's all the lawyers and the politicians and the pharmaceutical people and the druggists. They came along and said, "Oh, no, no, no. These people out here can't handle bloodroot." Oh, my God, these people out here, they can't handle opium, cocaine, heroin. No, sirree, Bob, we got to regulate and control that. And then they come to us and recommend to us that we take vaccines. Vaccines with mercury. Vaccines with mercury that cause things like sudden infant death syndrome and autism. That's what we ought to have. Oh, my God, no, you shouldn't have bloodroot. And where do we get this? It doesn't come from the revelation of God in the Bible. It comes from our lawyers and our politicians, our paid professionals, the preachers over here that tell us, "Oh, yeah, you should obey all the laws of the United States." Do you know what God told us about practicing the laws of the United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, etc.? Do you know what he said about that? Let me read it to you. It's in Leviticus chapter 18, first 5 verses. I think it's very instructive. I know when I went to school, my teachers were very adamant about me practicing all the laws of the state of California. I was in court here one day, and Charlie Brown, our local judge, he said, I'm going to put you on parole or probation. Not parole, but probation. He said, now, if you will agree to obey all the laws of the state of Missouri, I'll give you this probation. And I said, Judge, let's use our heads here. If I could practice all of the laws of Missouri, we wouldn't be here today, would we? Boys and girls, has it ever occurred to you that the statement that we read in Acts 5, verse 29, that says we ought to obey God rather than men? Has it ever occurred to you that some man, somewhere, sometime, might give us an instruction or a threat that we might have to tell him, no, we won't go? Has that ever occurred to anybody? I know the census lady came after me one day, and she said, it's the law. You got to comply with this census requirement. And I said, well, no, I didn't know that it was the law, because the law of God tells me that Israel shall not be numbered, and I'm an Israelite. And you're not coming in here and number me. I'm not going to comply. I'm not going to help you with this criminal activity, lady. And she kind of thought I was stupid. I just wanted to share with you that 70,000 Israelites, 70,000 living, breathing human beings died in a plague one time for participating in a census. That's a historical fact. So I don't participate in the census because it's against the law. Once in a while, we have to stand up, you know, and say, hey, no, that's against the law. We're not going to do that. Well, over here in Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 5, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, and he said, you speak unto the children of Israel and say to them, I'm the Eternal your God. Most people say, oh, no. No, the United States of America is my God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, where I bring you, shall you not do. And neither shall you walk in their ordinances. You shall do my judgments, and you shall keep my ordinances to walk therein. I am the Eternal your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them, because I am the Eternal. Now there's a pretty plain statement, boys and girls. We're instructed to follow the laws of God. And if the laws of the United States and the laws of Florida and New York don't get in the way, then that's fine. You can drive 55 and drive on the right side of the road. God never instructed you as to what side of the road you're to drive on or how fast you're to drive. But boy, he had a lot to say about usury and interest. And he's had a lot to say about census. He's got a lot to say about vaccinations and vaccines and medical doctors and lawyers and preachers. And he tells us very plainly not to follow after all of these pagans, but, you know, we've got to practice the scientific method. I mean, we wouldn't know unless we experimented, now would we? Okay, well, boys and girls, we have the biggest housing bubble in the history of the world, and we're experimenting, and we're very shortly now going to find out the results of that experiment. Now, we've been experimenting with vaccines and vaccinations now for about 150 years. And the experience that we have had is that vaccines cause disease, vaccines do not prevent disease, and vaccines kill people by the millions. That's what we have experimented with, and that's what we have found out. And people still want more vaccines. Well, okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Get right after it and do some more vaccines. I always figured that if one vaccine was good, wouldn't two be twice as good? Wouldn't it be much better? You know, the next time you go in to get your kid shot up with some vaccine, tell them, give them two shots. You see, when you're using essential oils or when you're using food as a medicine, you can't overdose on it. I mean, if you can eat one orange, you can eat two oranges or three oranges, and it isn't going to kill you. I'm not so sure what's going to happen to you if you take one DPT shot, and then if one's good, then you take a second DPT shot, because that could cause you some real problems. I don't know how much thimerosal your body can take, but I guess some bodies can't take quite as much as others. And I reported to you the other day that when they cut thimerosal out of the vaccines in California, their autism rate dropped in half. Now, that is caused, that is called by the medical doctors, they got a name for this now, it's anecdotal evidence. And what they're saying is, it doesn't mean anything. Don't believe it. I always liked old Groucho Marx. He said, are you going to believe me or your lion eyes? Yeah, that's right. Are you going to believe what you see? Or are you going to believe those lying doctors? And people prefer doctors and the word of the doctor. I told you about my granny. I mean, my granny worshipped the medical profession. She loved the doctor. That doctor, when he told her to do something, it was an order. She came back and she announced, I'm under doctor's orders. I have to take this. I have to do this. I guess if that doctor would have said, well, you need to take five bullets out of the chamber and flip it around a couple of times and stick it up to your temple, Mrs. Gordon, and pull the trigger. Do that once a day for 10 days and see how that comes out. If her doctor had ordered her to do it, I think she would have done it. It would have been a good therapy. I don't know what's happened to common sense here in America, but it's not nearly as common as it was 50 or 60 years ago, I can tell you that, from my first-hand observation. Now I'm going to introduce you to a new concept over here called revelation. A fellow by the name of Harry Rimmer wrote a book called The Harmony of Science and Scripture. Now I'm running out of time here, but I'm going to give you the introduction, and we'll take this up next time. In 1936, this guy wrote a book called The Modern Science and the First Fundamental, The Harmony of Science and Scripture. And he's a scientist. He was a scientist that believed in revelation as opposed to the scientific method. And he said, not everything can be understood and not everything can be determined by the scientific method. There are some things in life that we need revelation. And God has provided that revelation in the Scripture. And he starts out and he calls this modern science and the first fundamental. And he said, every generation not only faces its own problems and difficulties, but also erects its own standards, its standards of values and judgments. So the average man of the 20th century has a new measure by which he computes the value of all things, material, philosophical, or spiritual. Being taught from early childhood to think largely in the terms of science, it is inevitable that modern man should reply to every problem with challenges, or which challenges his interest, what does science say on this subject? What does science say? And you know, every place we look in the Scripture, when science is asked, science corroborates the revelation from God every single time, without exception. And I'll show you that next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, we're about out of time, so let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back there tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.